From Smile Empty Soul here in beautiful St. Louis, Missouri at Firebrand Recording, which is a wonderful studio here, tracking our new record, Swan Song, which will start to be released one song at a time here in probably about June, and then the whole thing will come out at the end of the year. So keep your ears peeled for it and check it out when it comes out.
Hey, it's your favorite comedian Anthony Rogers, live in his tour bus, yeah. But also, you need to get a beard like this. People have been talking. They said your shit looks whack. It looks weird. They can't tell your pronouns. You need to get a beard like this right now. And the only way to do that is by using Luxurious Bastard Beard Oil. Great smell, great function, great everything. Just get this, and there's directions on how to use it if you know how to read. But use the link in the description, go to the website, use promo code LEGENDARY, get a discount, do it, thank you, boom.
Welcome back to the best show in the universe. How are you doing?
Good. How are you doing?
Good. Shout out to the 753 people watching live on Rumble already. It's going to be a big episode.
Oh, my God.
And if you're listening to this later, you're cool, too. You know, I love if you listen to this later, too. But if you're one of the hundreds of people that were sitting here waiting, I love you the most. You know, that's all I'm saying. I appreciate you, too.
Yeah.
Crazy subject, crazy guest tonight. Exciting. You know, I'm really into reincarnation. You seem to be into that, too.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
I feel like I'm just gonna learn a lot. You know, I feel like we got a good subject that we haven't. I don't know if we've covered this yet. We've talked about it on kind of in other episodes, but not like a whole episode on reincarnation. You know.
Yeah. Who was the chick you had on where she had that whole channeled book about the afterlife? I thought that was really interesting. That was kind of similar, but it wasn't like just specifically reincarnation.
Very true. Yeah, we did cover it though in there. But yeah, no, this whole. I'm pretty excited. This guy's awesome. He does a lot of public speaking on a lot of different things. He's written 3 books. They're linked in the description if you want to teach yourself how to read, you know. And I asked him because I'm stupid, so I asked if they have audiobooks. He said yes. So I'm like, you can listen to the audiobook like I'm going to do probably.
I'm just so it'll literally take me like, you know, hours to read through shit sometimes.
Dude, I'm always doing something, so I just want to listen to his books while I'm working out or something like that. You know, I think it's just a
good thing.
That's my excuse for being dumb. That's my excuse for being too dumb to read. But I'm hyped though. He's a psychic. He's a lawyer. We're getting to that. His name's Mark Anthony. How you doing, brother?
Hey, how's it going, Anthony? Hey, Nikki. Thank you for having me on. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, of course. Thanks for coming on.
Dude, yeah, I appreciate it. People are into it. We're already at like 1,000 people watching. We just introduced you, so it's gonna be
great.
Like Rumble's awesome. You're awesome. I mean, I think. We didn't want to start, but Vicky had a great question before asking about like. Explain being a psychic warrior. Explain that because that's like your handle on social media and stuff. Like that was a great question.
I get that a lot. I was born into a family of psychic mediums. Both my parents had these abilities, and I've tracked it back four generations on both sides of the family into the 1890s.
Yeah.
The thing is, I'm the first person who's gone public with it. My dad was a U.S. Navy SEAL, and then after that, he was an aerospace engineer. And then my mom was a commercial illustrator and an artist, and she was in fashion design. And so when I was about 3.5 years old, I started interacting with my invisible friends, which is not unusual for a toddler, but when mommy and daddy can see who I'm talking to. And I'll never forget, mom was like, oh, he's got it. And dad's attitude was, oh, geez, he's got it. Because my dad was worried how I'd be treated. In all my books, Never Letting Go, Evidence of Eternity, and my most recent book, The Afterlife Frequency, I do write about stories from my family's psychic heritage, and it's really fascinating. In 2016, PBS did a special called The Italian Americans, and my mother's family's of Italian descent.
Oh, I'm Italian too.
Okay, paisan. And they did an entire segment on my maternal great-grandmother, Giovanna, and referenced her psychic abilities. And she was known in Little Italy in New York City and in North New Jersey as the woman who knows things. And then, you know, my dad's family hailed from Pennsylvania, and they were very conservative, white Anglo-Saxon Protestants. But my father had four siblings, three sisters and a brother. His sister Marjorie, his mother Isabel, and his maternal grandmother Grace were also mediums. So this has just been part of my life. And when I was a teenager, I was very much drawn to the clergy, which is not an unusual thing for a medium to be drawn to the spiritual. But then I decided I kind of didn't want to do it. Basically, I hit puberty and I was like, yeah, I don't want to be a priest. and I thought there'd be too many rules and regulations going into the clergy. So I went into law. And so it's kind of like jumping out of the frying pan into the fire from one set of rules to the other. So I've always had these abilities. It's always been part of my skill set. And a couple of years, about 10 years ago, actually 15 now, I was in New York City at a conference, a media conference, and a couple of the reporters there heard that I was both a lawyer and a psychic. So they started branding me the psychic lawyer, and it stuck. But in more recent years, we've modified my brand to Mark Anthony JD Psychic Explorer, the JD being my law degree, Juris Doctorate, and Psychic Explorer because I'm an afterlife researcher, near-death experiencer, and researcher, and I travel the world studying theology, mystical location, supernatural phenomenon, and ancient mysteries. And that's why I'm on a lot of shows. To talk about a wide variety of topics like this one tonight. We're going to be talking about reincarnation. So there you have it in a nutshell.
That's so cool. We'll see. I was actually just talking to my friend. I was talking to Mike, actually. We had him on last night, or the night before last. And we were talking about like our family lineage and like, because he's also psychic. And I was telling him about how on my mom's side, my grandma was from Sicily and she could speak in light language, which I can also channel light language. But at the time she would just be speaking in tongues and no one really knew what the hell was going on. And then my grandpa, my great grandpa, he was from Cuba and he was Pentecostal and was also into magic. And so magicians, witches, magicians, and psychics also run on in my family as well. And I just started learning about something called Italian folk magic, which you might be familiar with, but it's basically a type of magic where you're working with the spirit of your loved ones and also saints, as opposed to working with deities, which depending on what practice you're doing, a lot of witchcraft is just working with like these higher dimensional beings and not necessarily working with like the spirits of your family. But that's why it's called folk magic, because it's like folks, you know, you're working with folks. And I'm also a medium, but I didn't really develop any of my gifts until about 2 years ago. They just kind of started happening. and so that's really cool. I love that.
Or they were already there and you just needed an event to open the door. Because this appears to be a genetic, genetically transmitted ability. And it's what would be known as a recessive genetic trait, meaning it can skip a generation or two. For example, being right-handed is a dominant genetic trait. 90% of the people in the world are right-handed. Left-handedness is a recessive trait, only 10% of the people. Because when I've encountered other mediums, I see a lot of them, like yourself, it seems to run in families. So anyway, it's a very fascinating phenomenon, and it certainly makes for an interesting life, that's for sure.
Definitely.
So in reincarnation, do you have memories of past lives, or how did you kind of get into that?
Wow, all of the above. Reincarnation is something that is part of the human experience. We tend to think of reincarnation as, when you think of reincarnation, you think of India, which is the birthplace of Hinduism, Jainism, Sikhism, and Buddhism, all of which have reincarnation as a basic tenet of their religious beliefs. But when you examine other belief systems like Judaism and Christianity, you will find that reincarnation is at the root of all of the major religions. And in Christianity and Judaism, and to an extent Islam, it's also a very controversial topic. But reincarnation has always been something that I've believed in. In the 15,000 readings that I've conducted for people and the tens of thousands of spirits that I've communicated with, when the topic comes up, all the spirits talk about reincarnation. Also in near-death experiences, people who have an NDE, and for those who may not be familiar with the term, a near-death experience is when you die and your consciousness, your soul, separates from your body, and there's stages. You know, you may just be floating around your body, or you may go through a tunnel into the light, and then once you get into the light, you may encounter people you know that have died. And then if you get to an even farther stage, it's where you encounter the light, which is our perception of the divine, and then you're pulled back. Near-death experiencers, pretty much all of them, believe in reincarnation.
Yeah.
It is, because I mean, it makes so much more sense than you die and then you're either going up ding to heaven or down to hell. Yeah. You know, I mean, that's a rather primitive belief system. And when you look at reincarnation and you look at quantum physics, my latest book, The Afterlife Frequency, and I'm very, very honored how well The Afterlife Frequency has done. It's won several awards, including the cover award for best book on reincarnation, the best holistic life inspirational book of the year, and Om Times Media, it won the OMI Award for metaphysical book of the year, and plus it was up for a Pulitzer Prize as well, as was my book before this, Evidence of Eternity, was also up for a Pulitzer. And the thing is,
Congratulations, by the way.
Thank you.
That's really in a huge accomplishment. Like, that's incredible.
Thank you. In The Afterlife Frequency, I introduce the concept known as the electromagnetic soul, the EMS. Mm-hmm. Based on years of research, every great spiritual teacher, whether it was the sages of ancient India through Zoroaster, through Moses, Buddha, Jesus, Muhammad, Lao Tzu, Gandhi, I mean, you can all of them, the Native American religions, all of them believe that the who and what we are, our soul or consciousness, as it's referred to in the realm of science, pre-existed the body, comes into the body, moves on after the body dies. We know from the field of neuroscience, which is the study of the human brain, that the brain, while only 2% of the body's weight, uses over 20% of its electrical energy. We know from the first laws of thermodynamics and physics that energy is neither created nor destroyed, only transferred from one form to another. So I developed the term the electromagnetic soul to describe what we truly are, which is pure consciousness, a soul, a spirit, which is eternal electromagnetic energy. And I'm very honored that a number of scientists have adopted the term, the electromagnetic soul. They like calling it the EMS, and I'm totally, totally good with that. And the EMS is the scientific explanation for all forms of spirit communication, mediumship, shared death experiences, near-death experiences, deathbed visions, out-of-body experiences, and reincarnation. So that's why I wanted to go through that explanation to lay the groundwork, because I'm on a speaking tour right now, and I'm going to be at New Living Expo in San Rafael, California, April 19th through the 21st. And I'll be speaking on the electromagnetic soul and the collective consciousness. Then the 2 weeks after that, I'll be at the Unity of Tampa and then the Edgar Cayce Association for Research and Enlightenment in Virginia Beach at their Reincarnation Summit, where I'll be presenting Debunking Death, the Science of Reincarnation and Near-Death Experiences. So I think it's important for people to understand that, like, what you and I are capable of doing, Nikki, with mediumship, spirit communication, and also things like reincarnation and out-of-body experiences, that there is sound scientific principles which can prove the existence of these.
Yeah, well, science, like quantum physics, pretty much, I feel like, can explain what you just described, like the theory of energy not being destroyed, and that it just doesn't, it's not like it just evaporates and then your body goes into the dirt and that's the end of it. You know what I mean?
Exactly. Yeah, go ahead.
We had someone ask in the comments, they said, hold on. They asked about star seeds. Wait, where did it go? They said,
I got it right there. Reincarnation. What are your thoughts on star seeds or sentience outside
star seeds or sentience outside our system?
Can, like reincarnating from other planets and stuff, essentially.
Oh, cool. See, now this is giving away part of my lecture. But since you're asking, I do believe in that. See, because what's always funny, every time I give a lecture on reincarnation, somebody will raise their hand and go, yeah, but there's more people alive today than have ever existed on planet Earth before, which is not true. Because according to the latest studies, humans, since you know, prehistoric times, there have been well over 100 billion humans on Earth since you know, Homo erectus, you know, Cro-Magnons started walking upright. But that's also assuming that Earth is a closed system. And the thing is, energy is a constant flow. And so the electromagnetic souls that are attached to this particular dimension, this particular planet, go through a series of incarnations. And then when you're done here, you transfer to another dimension. Meanwhile, there's also a steady stream of EMSs from other dimensions outside our system. So I hope EHL Howard, I hope that answers your question.
Well, I have something to say on it. I personally identify as a starseed. I've had many lives in other realms and on other planets. And I just recently started to remember some of these memories. One of the most vivid memories I have is actually being in the draconian star system as a dragon, like being a literal dragon and flying and seeing other dragons flying. Like, it was so vivid and it felt so natural to be like in the air flying. I also have memories of being on a star system called Lyra as a cat being, like a humanoid cat being. And then being in another star system called Avian. Well, the beings there were called blue avians and they were like bird beings. And I get a lot of spiritual messages through birds. I feel really connected to birds. And I'm also an air sign. So I don't know if there's like a connection there or what, but with the current spiritual ascension happening on a collective level, there definitely are a lot of star seeds that volunteered to incarnate here from higher dimensions, higher realms, in order to come in with these high frequencies that would eventually be unlocked. Like you were just saying, the spiritual gifts I had were something triggered it. And obviously, like once you become kind of spiritually in tune, your vibration and your frequency rises. And so from what I understand, the whole point of star seeds even being here is to collectively help raise the consciousness collectively or whatever. And so, that's just my personal experience, but yeah.
That's awesome. That was a good story. That was awesome. What, Mark, do you remember some of your former lives by chance?
I'm sorry?
Do you remember some of your former lives?
Do I remember some of my
former lives?
Past lives.
Oh. You know what it was? The sound. It sounded like you said, do you remember some of your photo ops? And I'm like, well, I'm constantly being photographed on tour. Like, well,
you're like, yeah, the paparazzi is just so crazy. Well,
my favorite photo op, I think, of all time, I had just done an episode on the CBS TV show The Doctors, and I was invited to be on the yellow carpet of Nat Geo's premiere of Genius. And so there we were in Hollywood, and it's a yellow carpet because it's National Geographic, you know, because their color is yellow. And the coolest thing was, there I am on the yellow carpet and all the paparazzi's taking pictures of me, and all of a sudden there's Jeffrey Rush. Jeffrey Rush, Academy Award winner, and he's the one who brought my hero, Albert Einstein, to life in Genius. And I actually got to have a conversation with him, and I was just blown away because Einstein's always been one of my heroes. And some years ago when I was at Princeton, and I don't know if I should say this on the radio, but statute of limitations has passed, I snuck into where Albert Einstein used to teach. You're not supposed to go there. Because I just wanted to stand where he stood. And there I was this big classroom. And I remember going, oh, my God, Albert Einstein stood right here.
That's wild.
Yeah, it was such an honor. So that was my favorite photo op. Now, as far as going into prior lives, I like to stick to what is evidential and what can be proven, okay? Because I did do a past life regression one time, and it's very interesting because it was in a group setting, and it was, remember Sylvia Brown, the great psychic medium? She probably died about 10 years ago, but she was very famous and very controversial. And she did this past life regression, and I felt that I was around 22, 23 years old, and I was dying. I could feel this terrible lung disease, like pneumonia. And then I went deeper into the lifetime, and I saw myself as about 7 or 8 years old, and there I was splashing around in this pool. And there was all these arches around it, but it didn't look like anything modern. I mean, it looked like, and all these little boys were all like sloshing around together. And I kept hearing Narbo, Narbo, Narbo over and over. I'm like, Narbo, what the heck is that? And when I came out of it, it was like, you know, and I remember when I was dying, I was surrounded by 3 siblings, I have 2 siblings in this world, and I kind of recognized 2 of them. The third I didn't. Long story short, when I got back home, I started doing internet searches of Narbo. And the thing is, in that lifetime, I felt like I had been like a farmer. It was very agrarian. And there was a Roman settlement in what is now southern France by the name of Narbo. And I'm like, okay. Ooh. And I start looking at it, and my heart almost stopped when I saw the ruins of the baths there, the public baths. And there were the arches, but they are all like cracked, and they're in ruins. And as I saw them in the past life regression, everything was brand new. So that would be a memory of a prior lifetime that has some evidential value to it.
Yeah. Wow. That's a trip.
Yeah, it was. For all the listeners, do you resonate with a particular period of time? Do you have talents that just come to you naturally? Are there people that you've met that you immediately like that you've never met before? And I don't mean just like, wow, he's hot or she's hot. Okay, but you resonate with them on a different level. And conversely, are there people that you immediately meet that you cannot stand? And these could all be symptoms of reincarnation. There is a very
fascinating past lives and stuff. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, there's a very fascinating case from the 1960s in India. And there was this little girl who was born, and her name was Rina Gupta. And around 4 years old, she started talking and she started telling her parents that I was married and I have three children. And she started talking about her husband and you know, this is India. And her parents being Hindus, it's like, okay, she's talking about her prior life. And then she goes, and my husband murdered me.
Oh my God.
Okay. So they're like, okay. And her story started circulating around Delhi in India. And there was a Sikh family who heard about this. And Sikhs also believe in reincarnation. And their daughter, about 10 years earlier, had been murdered by her husband. And the story matched up to their daughter's.
Wow.
So they paid a visit on the Gupta family. And little Rena, she was taking an afternoon nap. And when she woke up and saw the Sikh family, she immediately said, Mom, like mother, father. She identified them as mother and father. She referred to their living daughter by her nickname. And she started revealing all of these detailed facts. And meanwhile, her husband, or the husband who had murdered their daughter, he was given early release from prison for good behavior. And she did not want to meet him until finally she was about like 11 or 12 years old. And they arranged for Anthony a photo op. And she didn't want to be touched by him, and they tried to put her in the same chair. And when he went to put his arm around her, she screamed, "He'll kill me again!" You know, and so this was very, very interesting.
Why were they taking a photo together?
Because see, in India, when a case of reincarnation comes up, it makes national news.
Oh, so, wow!
She was a real big deal. Now, okay. And but yeah, she did not want him touching her. And
I wouldn't either. Are you kidding me?
Yeah, it's pretty intense, isn't it?
That is crazy.
Like, no.
Something similar. Like I'm like that when I watch like I Love Lucy or like old stuff like that. I feel like I was around back then somehow. I remember being
me
in, like,
too. I love old shows.
Yeah, I remember like being in that time. It gives me a weird feeling in my stomach. Like my soul remembers being in that time. Again, no evidence. Yeah. So it's just a form of vibe and a feeling and stuff. But I think that, like, not watching it, I'm like, why does this seem familiar? Other than I watched it as a kid, I get that too. But I remember just like I feel like I was like, I remember being in an apartment in New York watching I Love Lucy, like when it was new. It was like weird.
Well, it's entirely possible because in the 1970s, actually it was 1967, Dr. Ian Stevenson at the University of Virginia founded the Division of Perceptual Studies, and he began studying children who were called.
Oh, I know what you're talking about. I don't know what you're talking about.
Oh yeah, he's a real big deal, and he died a few years ago, and so he started doing studies with children who remembered prior lives, and they focused on prior lives that could be verified, like in the case of Rena Gupta and others. And it's really uncanny about the amount of detail, because people say, oh, I don't believe in reincarnation. But a little girl in the 60s in India recalling a prior life is one thing. But let's fast forward in time to the early 1990s to an Indianapolis police chief, head of the homicide division, Robert Snow. Now, Robert Snow comes from a Midwest Methodist family. He's a tough guy, no nonsense, in his words, a no BS cop. And certainly he didn't believe in reincarnation. But then he met a therapist who engages in PLR, which is past life regression therapy. Mm-hmm. Past life regression therapy is where you hypnotize somebody to go back into a prior life. And it's used by psychologists to address phobias and fears that they can't identify the source for. Now, my co-host, I have a weekly show, The Psychic and the Doc, on Transformation Network. People want to find out how to tune in, visit my website, afterlifefrequency.com, just like my website, Afterlife Frequency, just like my book. And Dr. Pat, she's my co-host, she said, the double-edged sword, the irony of PLR, past life regression therapy, is it's acknowledged as a treatment for phobias, but the American Psychiatric and Psychological Association immediately rejected as proof of reincarnation. So it's interesting that you get hypnotized to go into a prior life to find out about a phobia, like why you're afraid of the water, maybe you drowned, or why you're afraid of fire, maybe you were burned or whatever.
Yeah.
So Robert Snow's, you know, this therapist says, well, why don't you do it? And he goes, oh, please, that's just a bunch of goofy people blaming their hangups and problems on some prior lifetime. So, but he's an open-minded guy, and so he does it. Well, he's shocked because he hits on three prior lifetimes, one of which he was a woman. All right, now this is not something a big bruiser cop was betting on is I was a woman, but the lifetime that really rocked his world, he saw himself on these cobblestone streets with horses and buggies, and he said he felt like he was in the late 1800s. And he said, I felt connected to France, but I knew I died somewhere else. I didn't die in France. I died in some big city somewhere. And then he saw himself painting a portrait, and he said, I could see every brush stroke, and he could hear his thoughts saying, I hate painting portraits, but I need the money. And he realized he was painting a portrait of a hunchback woman. Okay, a hunchback woman. Well, he comes out of it and he's like, well, this is really weird. Long story short, he does a number of sessions, and being a homicide, not just detective, but chief of the division, he starts keeping track of the details. He's got hundreds of details. Now, this is in 1992. The internet didn't become accessible till 1993. So he couldn't have looked anything up on the internet. And he starts going through the libraries and the art books looking for portraits of a hunchback woman, nothing. Looking everywhere. He's just, you know, exasperated. And so, you know, he was newly married, and his wife said, well, let's, you know, they decided to go to a trip to New Orleans. And he'd never been to New Orleans before. So he said, the last day that we're there, we're walking around and on Royale Street, and he walks into an art gallery, and he said his heart almost stopped.
Oh, my God.
There was the portrait of the hunchback woman. Uh-huh. And he's like, this is impossible. He goes, how can this be? And the gallery owner looked up the artist. His name was J. Carroll Beckwith. And he said he spent a lot of time in France. But I think here it says he died in New York City. Okay. He was connected to France in some way, but he died in a big city. Now I'm giving you the shortened version of all this. So now the homicide detective has New York City. So he goes to the Institute of Art and Design, and lo and behold, J. Carroll Beckwith's diary, 17,000 pages of it, is on microfiche. Remember ancient microfiche? You go to the library, and basically it was like a form of photocopying, and they were putting it on film.
Yeah, right.
And all the details, he matched up every single detail from his past life regressions. And he found that J. Carroll Beckwith was a portrait painter who was never famous, never did any masterpieces. And he died in New York City, but spent a lot of time in France. And he just matched up all of these details. Now, a lot of people say, oh, in a prior life, I was an artist. Why didn't he say he was Michelangelo or Monet?
Right.
Something like that. Why would he say he's an obscure artist nobody's ever heard of? See what I'm saying? And that lends credibility to his story. So there's a couple different ways people can discover about their prior lives. One of which is remembering it. A toddler starts giving great details, and there's thousands of documented cases about that. There's others like yours, Nikki, where you start having memories, manifestations, and then there's past life regression therapy, where we're hypnotized and you do this. Now, For the benefit of your listeners, if you're interested in PLR, past life regression therapy, go only to a licensed, certified psychologist. Do not go to some fly-by neon hand sign in the window. This is very serious stuff. And if you're going to engage in that level of hypnotherapy, you need to do it under the supervision of somebody who is licensed, accredited, and knows what they're doing.
Yeah. Okay.
So put that out there.
I did one past life regression. I did a starseed regression with a spiritual teacher I work with. And I didn't really know what to expect, but the first things that came up were past life trauma was really the first thing that came through.
That's very typical. And see, because that's what PLR does, is to find out why people have traumas. What was your trauma, if you don't mind my asking?
Well, the first one that came through was actually that a planet I lived on was destroyed. And before I could even get to that point in the regression, I just started feeling this like grief. Like I just started crying uncontrollably, and I didn't really know why. And I was trying to visualize this planet and I couldn't. Oh, it makes me want to cry now for some reason. It's weird because it's like this version of me has no emotional connection to what that even is. But then there's this deeper version that I'm still not even really totally connected to or understand, that feels the pain of whatever it was I went through in that past life. And it was really traumatizing just to like kind of even attempt to wrap my head around what had happened. But I think like some of the stuff I've gone through in this lifetime has been, you know, drug addiction and sexual abuse. But like my spiritual teacher was like, have you ever felt comfortable? And I'm like, you mean in general? And he's like, yeah. And I'm like, I mean, no. I think that's why I used drugs. And he was like, I think that there's a lot of deep-seated trauma, even just from this one experience, that is still in your body, that's making you physically uncomfortable. And that's why you felt like you needed to self-medicate.
Did you find that confronting it through the PLR helped alleviate some of the stress?
Yeah. I mean, I sat there and I just tried to not judge myself and like just feel the feelings, despite however this human body and mind was kind of trying to process what I was experiencing. I tried to just let it go and feel those feelings, because my teacher was like, just cry as much as you can, because like your soul on an energetic level is holding on to it, whether you're conscious of it or not, you know. And that's kind of what you were saying, is the whole purpose of kind of going under is to tap into the subconscious that's connected to every lifetime, connected to our soul. And I did feel relief afterwards. I'm definitely going to go back and do more, because like, I do think that there's a lot of past life trauma that is being like manifested, or that has manifested in this lifetime as well. And in order to kind of unpack some of the stuff that's happened in this lifetime, I have to go back and unpack what happened in past lifetimes. So, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I wonder how many lives and stuff. I think about that a lot. I think about someone in the comments was saying, like, excuse the enunciation because I'm a caveman, but like Lyra was destroyed. Is it a planet name or something? I'm not familiar with like
That was one of the star systems that I said earlier that I was from. So that's another planet that I was on that was destroyed. So there's actually a couple planets that I know of that I was on that was actually destroyed, but this first memory I had, I've never even heard of the planet in the past life regression. It was a planet that I wasn't even familiar with. Oh, but Lyra was destroyed. There are a couple of ancient star systems or planets that were destroyed, and it can be somewhat of a common theme for those for starseeds from those planets to just feel homesick, but not really have any real reason for why they feel homesick, or just like out of place. Like, I don't know. It's hard to explain, but I definitely feel like a common theme in my life has been feeling like, I don't know. It's hard to relate to people. Like, I feel like before I even knew that my soul came, what lived on other like planets, I always already kind of felt like an alien, not like an actual alien, but like alienated. You know what I mean?
We got to be careful when we're talking about things like this, because And I have no reason to not believe you or your authenticity, but I can see how a lot of people would have questions because there's no way to verify it.
Right.
You see what I'm saying? I mean, you're talking about another star system, another dimension, and it's entirely a subjective perception.
Yeah.
And I'm not being critical. I'm just saying you always have to be careful because, you know, the skeptics can just rip that one apart. That's why in my research, both with metaphysics and with reincarnation, I focus on people that have memories of prior lives that can be verified, because that's everything that I do involves evidence and verifiable facts, because I certainly believe in other dimensions, life and other planets. I've encountered and done readings for a number of people who claim to be abductees, including Calvin Parker, who is or was, he died last year, the most credible alien abductee on record. Also Nancy Tremaine and a number of other people. I've consulted and with MUFON, the Mutual UFO Network, and we look at, you know, the facts and the evidence of what we can prove.
Right.
So you always have to be careful when you're talking about an incarnation and a life on another planet, another dimension. See, the three of us get it because we're in the business.
I'm aware of that.
You just got to be careful because the skeptics are just going to zero in on that because there's no way to defend that position. This is the lawyer in me.
I know. That's what I was going to say. I think it's how you view the world as a lawyer. I was just going to say that. Like, that's how like a lawyer views the world.
Yeah. Well, you know, I haven't actually tapped into any past lives on Earth yet. So the only past life memories that I have were the regression I did were just past lives on other realms. So I have yet to actually tap into, I'm not saying I haven't had past lives on Earth, but I just haven't gotten there yet. But when I do, I will take that into account because that is, an interesting point you bring up is being able to kind of verify on some level, like what it is that, you know, confirmation really.
Exactly. That's what's important because, and you know, when you're going into a hypnotic state and see, this is also one of the reasons why the American Psychological and the American Psychiatric Association do not ratify PLR as evidence of a past life is because, is this really a past life memory? Is this some type of, maybe you're tapping into a dream? And I'm not, once again, I am not discounting anything that you've been through. It's that, you know, they have to make sure that these type of therapies encounter and engage in things that can be verified. I mean, I have connections with ancient societies in this world, and there's really no way to prove it. Now, the Narbo thing really took me by surprise because I actually saw the ruins. Yeah, the ruins of it. And, you know, I've been in places in the world where it's like I had never been there before, but I'd been there before.
Yeah, it was familiar.
Yeah, it's very, very familiar.
Yeah.
So, and there's a lot of people that, and then once again, I read a bunch of archaeologists trashing reincarnation. They said, why is it that only Greeks, Romans, and Egyptians reincarnate? Don't any Magyars from Central Asia or don't any, you know, they started mentioning, don't any ancient Etruscans ever reincarnate? And they're making fun of this. And the thing is, I believe certainly that all those people have. It just seems like people that are recalling more familiar civilizations tend to be the ones stepping forward. I mean, if you're remembering a cave person life, okay, oh, I used to live in the forests of, you know, Montana, you know, 10,000 years ago, it would be hard to find any evidence to support it. And it would be hard for other people to relate to it. So,
You know, it's funny you brought up ancient Egypt. Go ahead.
You go.
Okay.
No, I was saying, especially if you had a bad life on Earth, would you come back though? So maybe that. Like, but that would be my explanation for only the cool thoughts. It's like, yeah, I had a really good life. I'm gonna go back check out that Earth thing. But if you didn't, it's like it was like I don't know about it. I mean, I was just like I didn't live a fulfilling life. I don't know. You know, it's like if there's even a choice. You know, I don't know. If we have the choice or not. You know, I don't know. But no, dude. I talked about this a couple times in here. I remember before I was born, and picking this life and stuff out of several avatars, and I made the right choice, I think, yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, that's interesting. That is interesting, though. I wish I had remembered before, but you were saying how you were in kind of like some sort of limbo or something, right, for a minute?
Oh yeah, that was like a bad part. It's like sphere prison. I felt like I was in like this like sphere prison with like a soul, and like I had to like wait forever by myself. And then they're like, "All right, you're ready to do it again." I'm like, "Oh yeah, you got on the slide again, you know?" And then like that's like what it felt like.
Yeah.
You know, like,
wait. Back up. Tell me about the sphere. I want to hear about that because I have something on that. Tell me what define sphere.
It was like a translucent sphere where I could see everything in like all this, whatever my dumb mind thinks space is in this human form. I was like this white translucent sphere. I saw like all this stuff. I was kind of trapped in there in like a waiting room for like however I lived my former life, I'm assuming. I don't know. And then like they told me to be good this time. Basically.
Like when you were observing things, did you feel like you were above the Earth, hovering above it?
Interesting. Way above it. I couldn't even – Earth. Earth was like not even in the picture of my view.
Hold on. All right. A number of people in near-death experiences, and I call this the NDE zone. And we have our material world dimension, and then there's the other side, the afterlife frequency. Yet in between, there's a transitional zone. And my friend and colleague, Jim Bruton, calls it the in-between. And there's also... Nancy Evans Bush, who is one of the founders of IANS, the International Association for Near-Death Studies. And before there was even the word near-death experience, she died during childbirth but was resuscitated. And she talked about this zone above the earth where it felt like a void, like nothingness. And a number of people have talked about that. And when you said sphere, because a lot of them talk about geometric shapes, spheres, these type of things. So you may be recalling the time before you incarnated in this current life, and you were in that the NDE zone, the place between this side and the other side. I think that's very fascinating. As soon as you said sphere, it's like, wait a second, I've heard this a lot before. So that may not be just like a dream or a fantasy. This could be a recollection of. Well, yeah. I mean, I believe it was real. Yeah.
I remember having being like a white light, talking to another white light that was smarter than me. That was just like, he was like, guide me through this. He goes, okay, this time is your last chance to be good. You know, it's like this weird thing they're telling me. I don't know if I was like, I don't know what I was, bro, but they didn't like me last time, I guess. You know, so I'm trying to, but that's what it felt like. And then it was like this like water slide into the avatar I picked. You know, it was like I don't know the exact number. I'd say four choices maybe where I saw all four lives happening at one time almost on Earth because all times like I feel like in a human body this is like a slow vibration, but like it's all happening at once. So that's how I feel. Right. Like that's what it looked like up there anyway. And I went down this like translucent water slide, and then I don't remember. I got like whitewashed as I went down almost. I don't remember much outside of it. I remember that because it was like this weird warning when I was an idiot kid. It was like, come on, you learn to be good, you know, like type vibe, you know. And now I feel like I'm trying to be that.
You went on like a water slide?
Yeah. Hang on, let me change. It was like a translucent water slide. It was almost like a down slope like that. It was like down slope into earth almost, into this life. And I knew, I don't know. I remember a brief briefing, and I think I'm reminded of it a lot. But you made me feel better because I thought it was a punishment. And I was just like, man, I was just like created to be punished.
No,
like, come on.
You know, no, that's it's interesting. Like, let's back. I know we're supposed to be talking about reincarnation, which we're kind of not. But the thing is, a lot of people have what's known as a DNDE, a distressing near-death experience, which is also referred to as a hellish NDE. And they go into that void and they think, oh my God, there's nothing there. I'll be totally isolated and alone. And the thing is, there is no hell. Hell's a mythological construct. The thing is, people that have DNDEs, the hellish NDE, oftentimes are in the NDE zone. They're between this side and the other side. And then there's people who are between incarnations. It would make sense that you're leaving the afterlife frequency, the other side, and then you're transitioning. And for whatever reason, you seem to have residual memories of this. So it doesn't mean you're crazy. It's pretty cool. And then when you talk about that slide, the slide going down, that's kind of an how you are able to perceive the energetic flow of your electromagnetic soul from a purely energetic state before it attaches to a new host, meaning a fetus. So I think that's pretty fascinating.
Yeah, it was definitely a weird, I think it reminds me to be a good person. And some of the comments were saying, I probably just live a low vibrational life, which makes sense. I'm drawn to that a lot. It says, hear me out. You're not a bad person. Your last connotation, you were not producing. You're dedicated to self-indulgence and consumption. And I feel, you know, I mean, I can see that being relevant. I can see my soul enjoying that. Like, I can definitely, you know, I mean, I get that. And I hope it's, I don't know. It kind of worries me because I'm always like trying to live a righteous life and stuff, but I know it's not always easy, you know?
Like, yeah.
It's weird. They call me a wizard in the comments. That's great.
Well, tell them to get their own dang podcast and do better. Shit.
Do we have like 2,000 people watching live? That's pretty good. That's great for a live stream. You guys, they must love reincarnation. That's a cool concept. Like, I don't know. Yeah, I don't know. So a lot of your stuff was saying in your briefing, Mark, for your publicist. I mean, a lot of said you have a lot of comparisons to like how like Christianity might review this and stuff, which is kind of cool. Well, you want to take us there? Like, what's how could this be? How could you be like a Christian and believe in reincarnation? I guess if that's the phrasing, more or less.
Yeah, there's nothing crazy about it. The reason I'm pausing because I'm organizing my thoughts. Part of my lecture that I give, which takes more time than we have, but there's a common belief that Christianity and reincarnation don't coincide at all, and that's not true. In the early centuries after Jesus, there were different philosophies within Christianity, which there are today too. And in Egypt, there was a great philosopher at the dawn of the third century. His name was Origen of Alexandria, Egypt. And he believed that we all go through a succession of lifetimes until we are with God. And he said, even Satan will eventually emerge from the pit of hell to be with God. But then after the empire split in two and the western half collapsed and the eastern half, which was the capital, was the modern day city of Istanbul, in the year 525 or thereabouts, the Fifth Ecumenical Council was called. And at the Fifth Ecumenical Council, reincarnation was banned as heresy and supposedly removed from Christian beliefs. However, a couple passages seem to make it through the censors. And in particular, the Transfiguration, which is in Matthew 17, Mark 9, and Luke 9. Transfiguration is one of the most mystical and studied passages, not just by Christians, but by several other faiths. And this is where Jesus takes a select group of apostles to the top of a mountain. It begins to glow white. A mist forms around them, and the spirits of Moses and Elijah appear on either side of him. Now, understandably, the apostles are freaked out, okay? Like, whoa. And the thing is, Moses was the giver of the law, Elijah, the enforcer of the law, and Jesus, the embodiment of the law, or rather the word of God. Right. So after this experience, they're like, well, you know, who exactly are you? And Jesus says, well, who do you say that I am? And basically, the discussion in all three gospels are that some say that you're the prophet Elijah returned. Other people say that you're John the Baptist. Now, what's fascinating about this is that John the Baptist was Jesus's first cousin. And John the Baptist was beheaded by order of Herod Antipas, who was the son of Herod the Great, the one that, you know, Jesus, Mary, and Joseph had to flee to Egypt and all that. And Jesus says to them, Elijah has come, but they did not recognize him.
Oh, wow.
In other words, and they said, and the actual quote is, they understood he was talking to them about John the Baptist. Elijah lived 800 years before Jesus and his cousin John the Baptist. And progressive Christians, Hindus, Buddhist scholars, Jains, Sikhs, and more mystical and esoteric, like the Kabbalist Jewish theologians, believe that Jesus was telling them that Elijah reincarnated in the form of John the Baptist. And so this is why it is believed that the Transfiguration very well may be a scriptural reference to reincarnation. So...
even the word transfiguration, it's like you are transformed, your soul is transformed into a different, like it's like a, you're a shapeshifter or something, you know what I mean? Like you're changing. Well,
the transfiguration, when people say mediums are not of God, mediumship is evil. Well, hold on. All of a sudden, Jesus brings forth the spirits of Moses and Elijah. Right. What do you call that?
Right, okay. Exactly.
And it appears there are some people who believe that the Transfiguration is was an ectoplasmic projection. Ectoplasm being a metaphysical substance that formed an image of the spirits who were communicating, in this case, Moses and Elijah. Mm. So apparently mediumship is in the Bible, and it is in several places. And the Transfiguration, once again, is one of the most heavily studied and mysterious passages. So I'll just kind of leave it at that.
I'm a Christian and I believe in reincarnation. You know, I think it's,
what's incompatible about it? I mean, God's all about forgiveness and second chances and reincarnation. Well, why do you need hell when you have reincarnation?
Right.
Okay? So I always tell people, be nice, because you don't know what you're going to be reincarnated as or where. Okay. Nikki, would you really want to be a woman living under the Taliban right now in Afghanistan?
Right. Exactly.
Exactly. Or Anthony, would you want to be a young Russian guy getting drafted to go fight in a pointless war against Ukraine? You know,
oh my God. I mean,
there's a lot of hell. There are a lot of hell. Yeah. Or what about people just here in this country who are homeless, starving? What about people who are grappling with cancer? Hell exists in many forms. You don't need a jerk with a pitchfork. Okay. It's right here. So anyway.
Yeah. Well, it's funny because it's like, okay, if God gave us these gifts, how could it be blasphemy? How could it be evil?
Exactly.
I mean, it's kind of a conundrum. It's like, well, God gave these gifts to me for a reason, to help people, not why would he give them to me for me to not use them and then be judged if I did? It's like he's not sadistic. He's not going to set me up to fail and to, you know what I mean? It doesn't make any sense.
There's another story in the Bible. The Pharaoh of Egypt was having nightmares about seven fat cows emerging from the Nile River, only to be devoured by seven scrawny, hungry, emaciated cows, seven plump ears of corn, in turn being devoured by seven scrawny ears of corn, and this reoccurring dream, and none of his court, none of his mystics could interpret it, but in his prison was the Hebrew Joseph, and it was reputed in prison that Joseph had the gift of dream interpretation, which is prophecy and foreseeing the future, and he was brought before Pharaoh, and he said, your dream means there will be 7 years of plenty followed by 7 years of famine. Now, Joseph is one of the superstars of the Old Testament and one of a real big deal. And so all these people, oh, prophecy is evil. And it's like, hold on a second. Prophecy in under the first book of Corinthians, chapter 12, verses 4 through 12, states that there are several gifts from God, two of which are prophecy and the other is discernment of spirits. So for people who just want to cast the first stone, perhaps they should read the entire Bible cover to cover, every passage, and make an effort to understand the religion you claim you follow.
I think they're going to be so wrong. I heard this pastor like respond to people that called like the church like hypocrites and stuff, and, they go, and then he just goes, "Well, you'll fit right in." It was like what? Nah. It was like so funny. Like, this guy was like, "There's all this hypocrisy there and stuff." He's like, "Well, you'll fit in, I imagine." It was like, "This is a great." I don't know, man. Like,
some of these people that go, "You're going to hell. You're going to hell. You're going to hell." Well, if heaven's filled with them, I don't think I want to go there.
I doubt it is, bro. I doubt they made the cut. Yeah, but I'm not the judge, neither are they. So it's like a bunch of people talking. I mean, about what you're talking about earlier, if you can't prove it, like they're just saying like their opinion and probably their projection, honestly, of their guilt.
Yeah, that's stuff. What it is, really.
Because they're not the judge. Like just because you like dressed nice and went somewhere on a Sunday doesn't make you the judge at the gates of heaven. That's crazy.
It's like if you really claim to believe in the religion, like you said, that you claim to know so much about, it's like, isn't the whole point to be like Christ? That's why it's called Christianity. Be like Christ. Christ hung out with drug addicts. He hung out with prostitutes. He didn't judge anybody. He just wanted to spread. He was the original light worker. He wanted to bring light and enlighten people, and he didn't judge anybody. So for people to sit on this high horse and sit there and claim that they can judge you, or that they're so holier than thou, it completely contradicts what they claim they believe or that they live for. It's ridiculous.
Doesn't it, though? It is fascinating. But the thing is, I want people to understand. I respect and cherish the teachings of Jesus and Jesus as a divine teacher. But I think Gandhi said it best. Gandhi said this, I believe, to a group of British generals. And of course, at that time, India was under British control. And he said, I like your Christ, but I don't like you Christians because you don't act like your Christ.
Right.
I love that. That's crazy. Yeah, his fan club gets annoying, man. But I still love God and all that. That's a great way to put it, man. That's a great way to put it for sure.
Yeah.
Well, thank you guys for having me on. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for coming on and talking to us.
Yeah, throw out any links you want people to get or books or any kind of promo before we get out of
here. Yeah, I got a lot going on. My latest book, The Afterlife Frequency, and the subtitles, The Scientific Proof of Spiritual Contact and How That Awareness Will Change Your Life. Please do not expect a dry and boring treatise. I suffered through enough boring books in the practice of law. I write my books like they're juicy novels, okay? Because I want to be educated and entertained. Keep up to date on my U.S. tour. Please go to my website, afterlifefrequency.com. I invite all the listeners to subscribe to my newsletter. And I'm going to be at New Living Expo in San Rafael, April 19th through the 21st, in Unity of Tampa the following weekend. And then on May 4th, I remember that one because May the 4th be with you. I'll be speaking at in Virginia Beach at the Edgar Cayce Reincarnation Summit. And then I will be at the Helping Parents Heal Conference in August. And in July, I'll be presenting at the Galileo Commission. That'll be an online event. And I want to, and in October, I'll be speaking at the Ancient Mysteries Conference and at Edgar Cayce back in Virginia Beach. And the topic there is the secrets, mysteries, and curses of Tutankhamun. So anyway, I got a lot going on. And I really want to thank you, Nikki, and you, Anthony, for having me on. And especially I'd like to thank all of the listeners and viewers for tuning in, because you are the ones that make the show happen. Thank you.
Yeah.
Stay. God bless.
Thank you so much. And then also, Mark is back next week talking about another subject. We'll let you know when. I'm not going to let you know the subject right now. But thank you all for watching. Like you said, that's a great point. Without you guys watching, this would be nothing. It would just be a Zoom call, you know. So I appreciate L. Howard in the comments. I'm blowing up the comments. I appreciate you taking interest in the show. Feel free to watch every weekday. We go live on Rumble every weekday right now. Except for not Friday sometimes, but every weekday at 8:30 Central, 6:30 Pacific, 9:30 Eastern. And then it goes to Spotify, YouTube, everything else after. But you guys on Rumble are awesome, and like watch it in great droves. It gets featured here because of Rumble. So that's where we do most of our stuff. Again, Mark's a great guest. I appreciate that. Go to his website, afterlifefrequency.com. Check it out. Check out some of his books. I'm definitely going to get a couple of his audiobooks and just kind of listen to that when I'm done tearing through the one I'm tearing through. But I mean, he said he did audiobooks, but you probably read better than me, so you can buy the print copy too, you know. And yeah, as always, I appreciate it. I appreciate the guests, the sponsors, the people watching. I appreciate it all, and I'll see you tomorrow.